good horse, I call you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune, to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else.
You're listening to episode 618 of Unwelcome Guests, The Consolidation of Police State USA. I'm Robin Upton. We take a break from our David Graeber reading this week to look at the somber reality of what is going on in the USA as regards the rapid rise of the police state. As regular listeners to the show will know, we often look at one aspect in detail of the change of society, especially in the US, looking at how long-standing legal precedents, civil rights, decentralized power is increasingly being overridden, with or without a legal pretext, in favor of hierarchical, top-down control by whatever means is necessary. And those whose main information source is the commercially controlled media might have missed the fact that the President of the United States now claims the right to kill anywhere, anytime, for any reason, or indeed for no reason at all. Whilst that is certainly a matter to be very concerned about, I find it even more concerning for what it reveals about the attitude of those people in charge of the US government, those people in charge of Obama, bearing in mind the fact that they control huge stockpiles of nuclear weapons. In our second hour, we're going to hear an interview of Bonnie Faulkner's of Frank Morales on the American military coup of 2012. In our first hour, we're going to hear the first half of Gary Knoll's Progressive Commentary Hour, in which he interviews Peter Dale Scott and Peter Phillips about the vanishing civil liberties in the US and the use of the war on terror rhetoric as a cover under which to install a police state. I've edited these interviews slightly just to remove some hesitations. The originals, as usual, are available for download from our webpage, unwelcomeguests.net/618. And both interviews this show are in the last couple of months. They wouldn't be as up to date if they weren't, because this is a very fast moving area. Legal precedents are being knocked back and set at a rate of knots.
I'm Gary Naughton. I'd like to welcome you to our presentation. Today, our issue is the erosion of civil liberties, human rights, and the demise of our democracy. My panelist will be Dr. Peter Dale Scott. He is a former professor of English at the University of California, Berkeley, where he also was the co-founder of the Peace and Conflict Studies Program. He is a recognized poet, a former Canadian diplomat, and a scholar. He is an author on both domestic and international political issues, and he is the author of some very important works, including The Road to 9/11, published in 2007, which deals with the geopolitical events that led to 9/11 and the history of the U.S. government's past cover-ups, criminal acts, and deceiving of the public. He is also one of the witnesses to appear at the international hearings on 9/11 in Toronto. His website is peterdalescott.net. He will be joined by Professor Peter Phillips. Professor Phillips is professor of sociology at Sonoma State University in California, where he teaches courses in political sociology, media censorship, and the sociology of power in the media. He is the former founding director of Project Censored, which, as many of you know, is an internationally known research program and watch organization that annually identifies the most censored news stories not appearing in the mainstream media. He's written many op-ed pieces on investigations. He has written for Counterpunch, Common Dreams, the social policy, free inquiry, and he also has done extensive conversations on this topic. He is the author of Censored 2012, the top censored stories of 2010 and 11. His website is projectcensored.org. And concluding our discussion today will be Stephen Ledman. He is a progressive economist. He is an investigative journalist. He tackles some of the most critical issues in the world. And he has degrees from Harvard University, University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business, and has worked in major organizations throughout the many decades he's been out there. He has authored How Wall Street Fleeces America, Privatized Banking, Government Collusion, and Class Warfare. He also hosts one of the most popular programs on the Progressive Radio Network, the Ledman News Hour, heard every Thursday at 11 a.m. and Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m. Nice to have all you with us today.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Glad to be here.
What I'm going to do is this. I'm going to do an extended introduction, as I want people to get a context of why I believe this is so important, this topic. After I share this extended introduction, in what will also be included in this extended introduction is some of the latest information that may not seem connected, but actually is to our topic. I will also be sharing a commentary from Professor James Tracy, who could not be with us, but he has something very important to talk about. It is entitled Police State USA, The Paranoid Style of American Governance. And Professor Tracy is a professor of media studies at Florida Atlantic University. But first, here are some of the facts that you may or may not know of if you're listening and watching. And you can watch today's program being video streamed by going to progressiveradionetwork.com or garynall.com. Between 2008 and 2010, over 6,600 travelers, mostly Americans, had Homeland Security literally search the full content of their electronic devices, meaning their laptops. Starting in 2010, the FBI started to raid homes of peace activists. Now, these peace activists had committed no crime. They had at no time crossed over that line into any criminal activity. They were merely identified as having participated in different peace activities and protests. Also, a large number of anti-war organizers were arrested, their homes raided. Now, that all falls under the rubric of material support for terrorism, meaning if they are writing and producing any literature over the internet or a book, an article, an op-ed, the New York Times, if they suggest other people should protest the government, that now can be construed as material support for terrorism. How in the world does that have to deal with terrorism? We will ask our panelists when I conclude this. There are 1,271 governmental organizations, 1,931 private companies working on programs related to counterterrorism and homeland security and intelligence. They are in 10,000 separate locations across the United States, and almost all are secret. Since 9/11, no less than 263 intelligence and counterintelligence organizations have been created or reorganized. There are currently 854,000 people who hold top security clearances and have the right to participate in spying on Americans, reading our emails, listening to our phone calls. There are now 33 new building complexes under construction in the Washington, D.C. area designated for top secret intelligence work. Together, this is equivalent to 3 Pentagons or 22 U.S. Capitol buildings. Now, why should you be concerned? According to the ACLU, warrantless wiretapping, Bush's executive order authorizing the National Security Agency warrantless wiretapping program expanding in 2005 to tap into domestic calls. Obama campaigned against that, but then voted to legalize the program and give government and telecoms immunity after they had clearly and unequivocally broken the law. So they decriminalized their criminal activity. that to many people was tantamount to taking a bank robber who had committed a million bank robberies and suddenly deciding that bank robbery shouldn't be a crime anymore. And hence, no actions were brought against any of the people who participated. Then there's the situation of torture, kidnapping, and detention. The government has the power to designate anyone, including any American, as an enemy combatant for any reasons that it chooses without sharing how that person was selected, what they did, what crimes they've committed. How are they indeed a threat to the United States or its security? At no point in any of the decision-making process does President Obama or any future president have to tell anyone how they came to their decisions. There is also indefinite military detentions of U.S. citizens, including the 2012 bill for Pentagon spending. There's growing surveillance as a society. Rapid expansion of security departments for data collection and storage and tracking and information mining and surveillance on all Americans. Also being done through the Joint Terrorism Task Forces, which are based on government-private corporation partnerships. Here is a question that I'll be asking my panelists. Knowing that corporate America puts profits first, and knowing that they have to have lobbyists and former legislators or people who had worked within the military-industrial intelligence system to open doors for them and paying very large consulting or sponsoring or lobbying fees, then whose interest are these massive amounts of new contracts supporting? The security of America, or just a perpetual another form of bureaucracy, one laid on top of another, on top of another, on top of another? The abuse of the Patriot Act. Non-citizens can be jailed on mere suspicion without any charges and detained indefinitely. Subject peaceful and lawful advocacy organizations are going to be and are now surveyed. They are harassed and criminal actions taken against them. There is a barring of the press and public from immigration hearings. Congress extended key provisions of the Patriot Act in May of 2011. The majority voted in the Senate to support it, and almost all the Democrats did. Government secrecy. Weakening the Freedom of Information Act, increasing in secret agencies, secret committees in Congress, secret courts to keep government activities away from the public scrutiny. The Real ID Act of 2005, which created the foundation for the national ID cards. Driver's license at state levels are being linked to databases shared with every federal, state, and local government agency. The no-fly and selectee list. Since 9/11, 720,000 names are now on their list. They even had Senator Ted Kennedy as a potential terrorist on their list. Political spying. The FBI and Department of Defense conducting their own spying activities on law-abiding citizens, including Greenpeace, the Quakers, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and many others. This is your FBI engaged in criminal activity, and yet they're able to do this with complete impunity. The use of surveillance drones to spy on Americans. Drones are requested by Orlando police for the GOP convention. Attacks on academic freedom. Provisions in the Patriot Act for censoring at the border to keep scholars with perceived political views out of the United States. If you are a scholar, if you're a Nobel laureate, if you've written anything that anyone in any of those agencies, and if you're one of the 800 and almost 900,000 individuals working in the intelligence system, and you deem that something someone has written is offensive or threatening, that person can be kept out of the United States and hence from sharing their views in person in this country. Attacks also through the Military Commission Act of 2006. It created a separate system of justice for non-citizens and denies them the right to challenge their detention in court. The act also gives the president the right to decide who is and who is not an enemy of the country. Criminalizing whistleblowers. In 2011, the SHIELD Act in the House amended the Espionage Act to make publishing classified information in investigative journalism a criminal offense. Hence, what at one time this president stated he supported, those speaking out when they know that a criminal activity has been committed. Now this is the president who is willing to arrest, detain, and remove that person from our society. Violent radicalization in the Homeland Terrorism Prevention Act of 2007. This broadens the definition of terrorism to include political activity of dissident groups. This is the modern version of COINTELPRO. Targeting killings of U.S. citizens. President Obama now has the right, without challenge, and with no legal authority above him, to decide if he wants to kill any American, and he can do so at his whim and leisure. There is no one who can now not be challenged with a drone or with some black op operation. Hard to imagine, he has the power. And according to those who are concerned about civil liberties, no one should have the power to take away habeas corpus, constitutional rights, without at least notifying someone that you are a suspect, you are a person of interest, we have some suspicions, and allowing that person to defend themselves in a court of law. Hence today, based upon the degeneracy of corporate America, who will do anything for a profit, imagine then putting the future of our security in the hands of people who have had a history of being serial offenders. How do I know this? How can I say this without seeming shrill or biased? Because I hired a group of scholars, including legal scholars, and I paid them to find the answer to two questions. How many people within just the pharmaceutical industry have been found guilty of crimes or paid fines and settlements because of the injury that they had committed by prescription drugs? I then took the same effort at Wall Street. I wanted to know how many investment banks had settled claims with or without acknowledging guilt, but settled claims brought to them. I wanted to know that these were criminal complaints, and the amounts were in the hundreds of thousands of lawsuits settled for the pharmaceutical industries, hundreds of thousands of lawsuits settled by Wall Street firms, sometimes causing hundreds of thousands of deaths in the pharmaceutical industry, and yet not a single person has ever seen the inside of a jail, no matter what crimes they committed on behalf of Wall Street during our investigations when these lawsuits were settled, or from the pharmaceutical industry, and that includes the notorious Vioxx settlement, where 60,000 to 400,000 Americans were killed because of Vioxx that they knew was dangerous, and yet, after paying $5.85 billion, they did not have to acknowledge guilt. They were identified, therefore, and their stock went up. Now, how many of these firms are now a part of, directly or indirectly, or have a financial control in, or leading investment in, the security agencies that now can use those ties, those insider information sources, to the advantage of their company and against someone else? And what if anyone has a personal bias against someone, against a Chris Hedges, against my own guest, Stephen Ledman, has been extremely outspoken, as has Peter Phillips and has also Peter Dale Scott. What if someone didn't like them? Do you realize the power we've given to silence individuals? So that's what happens when you have that. We also have arrest of witness recording police actions. Today, it is against the law for you or any journalist to record audio or video of any police that are doing anything abusive. If a policeman is doing something that you feel is a violation and you were to film that person, you would join 30 journalists who have been arrested so far. 12 states have adapted an anti-eavesdropping law where you cannot film and you cannot record the police in any action. What would have happened then with the Rodney King video? We wouldn't have it today under Obama. Little ironic, isn't it? Perhaps the main template for the erosion of civil liberties and human rights is this question. How has the war on terror implicated us as Americans and impacted the rule of law? the freedom of association, the freedom of information, the freedom of speech, the right to legal representation, the freedom from unreasonable searches, the right to speedy and public trial, the right to liberty, habeas corpus, posse comitatus, TSA body scanners, Obama's kill list, prosecution of whistleblowers, FISA Amendment Acts, Patriot Act Section 505, which permits the FBI to search library and business records without probable cause. The FISA Amendment has eroded rights to freedom from unreasonable search and seizures. The prosecution of whistleblowers and discard for whistleblower protection rules. Obama's kill right, the right of president to have any American assassinated without any repercussions. And also the continuation of racial, ethnic, and religious profiling, despite official policies against it. The TS body scanners oppose privacy and health problems. Posse comitatus, which forbids the use of military against U.S. citizens, is gone. There's an increased militarization of domestic policing, intelligence gathering. Habeas corpus is dead. The right to liberty. Americans may be jailed without being charged or being able to confront witnesses against them. The right to a speedy trial, public trial. Government may jail Americans indefinitely without trial. Freedom from unreasonable searches. The government may search and seize American papers and effects without probable cause or assist terror investigations. The right to legal representation. The government may monitor federal prison, jail, house conversations between attorneys and clients and deny lawyers to Americans used by crimes, and the freedom of speech. Government may prosecute librarians or keepers of any other records if they tell anyone that the government subpoenaed information related to a terrorist investigation. That is my concern, but let us now go to my guest, as I've given why I'm concerned. Let us begin with Peter Dale Scott. Professor Scott, would you take on the issues at hand and share your concerns, your insights, now that we have some idea of what we're faced with?
Yes, well, I think that's a very good survey, and I think your concern about it is fully justified. You mentioned the profit motives, and when we have this surveillance now, which is very big business, you said that accurately that it is being militarized. America is now a military area, NORTHCOM, just like South America is a military area, SOUTHCOM, and that means that the Posse Comitatus Acts are out the window because we have permanent, not only the military involved in things like surveillance, but also there's a permanent brigade waiting to deal with any protest, anti-war, whatever that gets out of hand. The profit motive is a big part of this. We have private, what I call private intelligence corporations, which are compiling files on people. They meet in fusion centers with local law enforcement and on the state level, and the military, the private corporations, and the law enforcement people share their data. And, of course, if you put a profit motive in, then the bigger the better. It's just like having private prisons has led to cases where people would be being sent to jail just to help the profits of the private prisons. One factor that I think we need to add to all this, and that is that way back at the time of Vietnam, the Pentagon did an assessment of how they lost that war, and their self-estimate of what happened is that they lost the war in America. Oliver North said this in his Iran-Contra hearings, that the war was lost in the streets of Washington. And so a great deal of the planning is directed primarily against making sure that there will never again be a protest movement that can stop American involvement in Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever, which I think is very, very unhealthy for America, because the historians of this country someday will be glad that the anti-war movement helped to end a war which should not have been fought in the first place. So now we have a huge system. You were right to bring in the pharmaceutical side of it, and the chemical companies. It's one huge machine. They share lobbyists. They all contribute funds to candidates of both parties, so you get secure majorities in both the House and the Senate for the laws which they really wanted passed. All this began, I believe, with the declaration of with the invocation of what they call continuity of government procedures right on September the 11th, 2001. and was made legal by the proclamation of an emergency on September the 14th, 2001. That emergency, by law, can only last for a year, but it's being prolonged year after year after year, and it was very disappointing and a sign of bad things to come when President Obama continued this artificial emergency. What is the emergency? We've had time to time scares like the underwear bomber and so on, but surely the cases that we know about don't begin to justify what's happened to this country domestically. 100,000 troops in Afghanistan to pursue what they officially said was 60 members of Al-Qaeda. You have overkill in every direction, and it's a way of a system keeping itself in power and making sure that the American people cannot use their democratic rights to change a really insane and dangerous policy, which, if not checked, it runs the risk of leading to another world war.
I appreciate those opening insights. I'll come back in a few moments to you, Dr. Scott. Professor Peter Phillips, would you give us your concern, your overview, and give us some examples of what you see as how this literally could impact a person who is not paying attention to it at this moment, who is lost in some form of other distraction in their life?
Well, first off, I would like to say that it's not incorrect to use the word fascism. Naomi Wolf wrote about this and highlighted what the signs of that were and the corporate power. You're saying that there's 1,200 government organizations, 1,000 private, that are interlocked in terms of anti-terrorist organizations. So this is contractors, close to 1 million people involved. This is a police state. And the number one story that was voted by all of our national judges for Project Censored this year and all the 20-some universities that participate is the emerging police state in the United States. So that doesn't get covered. This whole program is not covered. These topics are not covered in the corporate media. So most people see little bits of this. They see little glimpses of this, but they have no idea the magnitude, or that the ICE holding cells all over the country can disappear people and transfer them around, and you don't even know where people are. This is a state of runaway capitalism and increased control of all the citizens here. It's terrifying in many ways for those of us that follow this closely. We really are in desperate times. And both parties, Republican and Democrat, are participatory in this, endorse it. So what you really have, not only in Congress, but throughout the world, is this 1%, the transnational corporate class of the world, are being protected by, and that's protecting of capital flow anywhere in the world, is being protected by the U.S. NATO military industrial media empire. And I add media in there because they are a propaganda fog machine for the 1%. So they don't cover, they don't tell us these dangers, they don't tell us the process whereby people could be arrested and simply disappeared. Everything Hitler did in the 30s, leading up to World War II and the attacks, everything that he did was legal because the German government passed laws that allowed that. So we're passing laws here in the United States to suspend habeas corpus, allow the president to designate people as terrorists. The passage of the 2012 Defense Authorization Act allows the military to detain indefinitely without trial any U.S. citizen the government labels as a terrorist or accessory to terrorism. So that definition is so broad it can be literally anyone, anywhere in the country and anywhere in the world. And not just labeling them, but killing them is now an acceptable process. So, yes, we are in desperate times, and those times, of course, demand revolutionary measures, responses of non-cooperation in massive ways for millions of people.
I appreciate your overview, Professor Phillips. You have had a chance to bring forward in your publications some of the cutting-edge journalism, almost never do you see that covered in the mainstream, and certainly not covered in the way that it is covered in the stories that you review. Give us an idea, at least from your perspective, why the mainstream media, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, the New York Times, Miami Herald, Boston Globe, and all these others, why they're not willing to come forward and state what you two have both stated tonight, that we have a police state at hand. We are engaged in allowing a relatively small group of corporations, with the influence of ALEC and other lobbying efforts, to control legislation, to control policy, and then to fund that, creating their own private public corporations that then determine what is lawful in behavior and what is not lawful in behavior. How come they're not doing this?
Corporate media, number one, has a bottom line to make profit. Number two, they have an idea that they want to continue to present credibility, that they're fair and balanced in bringing the news to that's important to the people in the United States. So they're covering, you know, issues around the world and different things, but they cover them from the perspective of the Pentagon, from the perspective of the White House. So the people cited as the experts, the how news stories are framed and how they're come to be understood, and even what topics are covered, are coming from their partnership, and it's a very symbiotic relationship with the most powerful people in the world. And that is the one who buys the advertisements that are, they're selling eyeballs to advertisers. And the idea is to keep us in a kind of a entertained fog state of being, where we continue to go shopping, we continue to buy products, and that keeps helps keep the economy afloat. And any resistance whatsoever is denigrated or labeled as extremists, and they refuse to cover in any kind of a macro sense everything that's happened. Probably everything you mentioned, habeas corpus, wireless wiretaps, at some point gets mentioned, but it never gets put in context. So, you know, we can tolerate, you know, how can we tolerate U.S. NATO forces killing people in over 100 countries in the world, private assassins, drones, millions of civilian deaths in Iraq alone, and that, as we see, and a 40-year decline in working people's standards here in the United States. They know that it's inevitable that the inner cities are going to erupt. That's why we have a North American command that Peter Dale talked about. That, I mean, that they know that they're going to ready to occupy any city with military force in the United States within a 24-hour notice. I mean, they're in stage. They're ready to arrest thousands of people and put them in huge military bases where, you know, they can be held and private prisons. So that's all in the works, and that's certainly, they're getting ready. They are meaning the powerful 1%, the policy elites of this country, the power elite that C. Wright Mills talked about. They are prepared and ready for resistance, and they do not intend to lose.
One more follow-up question on that line for you, Professor Phillips. Keith Overman repeatedly would challenge in some very articulate and brilliant, insightful commentaries, Bush's follies. He had a segment of his program called Bushed. He also did some of the best commentaries against what Bush was doing that I've heard. Now that he had Obama, he would have on Obama supporters. He would have on the top leadership of the Democratic Party. Nancy Pelosi was a regular guest. Barney Frank, a regular guest. And others, regular guests. Then I started to see Rachel Maddow and the people from MSNBC, the same thing. They would target what was wrong with the Republican side. They would not be as voracious against the Democrats. And I saw them both as being two heads, the corporate head of the Republican Party, the corporate head of the Democratic Party, at virtually indifferent of how the outcome would represent a fall in quality of life and standard of living for the average American. And yet, we don't have the official left, and it's the official Democratic spokespersons, the media, talking as you've been talking. In fact, they would say just the opposite. Keith Urban repeatedly denigrated the conspiratorists, nuts, you know, calling them nuts. So when individuals, credible individuals, talked about inconsistencies in the 9/11 official reports. Now, these were scientists, these were physicists, these were engineers. They had no politic involved. They simply said the official report was wrong. Instead of bringing them on and saying, prove to us that there was something wrong, show us your evidence, show us your forensic evidence, and then having maybe a jurist on who could challenge them, that would be legitimate. Instead, they were all backhanded by Keith Olbermann as if they were conspiratorial nuts. Then if someone suggested that there were detention camps being built, conspiratorial nuts on both the right and left. Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, Michael Savage, they all think everything that is suggestive that the government is taking away our rights as conspiratorial nuts. As a result, then we have to ask a basic question. Who then is going to go out there and see whether or not there are inconsistencies in official reports? Are there detention camps? And if there are detention camps, how many are there? What is their purpose? Who are they supposed to hold? Is it supposed to be for illegal aliens? If so, why do we have less illegal aliens now than before? And what are we supposed to do with all these? But we're not given a straight answer. All we're given are media suggesting that an official answer, it would challenge everything that anyone such as yourself would state. So could you give us this? Could you tell us what does it mean for you personally when you are not invited in, or the journalists you work for invited in to present your information, no matter how alarmist it may seem, in the context of having documentation and scholarship to verify and factually accord it? When you're not even given that chance, you're simply backhanded as if you're a conspiratorial nut. And by the way, that even happens in some of the programming on Pacifica stations. I can assure you of that. I myself had to counter that. So give us that idea.
Well, we did get Pacifica on the 10th anniversary of 9/11 to do a 9-hour special all that day, where 2 hours of it were debates between 9/11 government critics and people who defended that. That was kind of a first for Pacifica.
That was a great breakthrough. That was a great breakthrough, yes.
It was really, and it was Mickey Huff and myself that really pushed that at KPFA, along with station managers, willing to accept that we would have an honest debate. Now, Amy Goodman had gone there a little bit when she had David Ray Griffin on. She did have the Loose Change fellas on, but she did it in a debate context. So rarely in Pacific or on the left is there any entertainment of an hour-long, two-hour-long interview by experts, by scholars, around issues that have been deemed by the corporate media as conspiratorial. So our goal is to sort of redefine what you know, and rehabilitate the word conspiracy. Every corporate board, every one of these corporations that you talked about who are anti-terrorist groups and, you know, working in that capacity, every one of those boards meets on a regular basis to plan how to maximize their profit. They're called business plans. Now, sometimes those business plans involve bribing foreign officials, making decisions that negatively impact citizens here in this country, and could, in fact, be illegal. Those are conspiracies. Conspiracies happen all the time. Now, exposing those is what corporate media or media and journalism historically was about. You ask who benefits, who loses, who wins, and who decides policy issues, where the money flows, how do these decisions get made, and that's what journalism is about. And we don't have that in the United States anymore. We don't have, you know, George Seldes is really making those kinds of questions in serious ways. If you do that, if you deviate from more than just humorous criticism of Bush or anyone else inside of the major talk shows and the major media, you're out of a job. You're just gone. And unfortunately, that's really, it's a terrible situation, which is something that Project Censored is very much engaged in addressing. We have a website. We put out a book. We have newsletters. And we get over 400,000 unique views on our sites monthly. And there's a lot of other groups around that are doing that. So there's plenty of valuable information available for citizens interested in these topics. And Gary, you do a really good job of bringing these forward. Your introduction to this was excellent. You've really laid out some of the key issues that we're faced with.
Okay, let me jump over to Dr. Scott. Thank you for that answer, Peter. Dr. Scott, when you see true believers of their own concepts and ideologies, such as Bill O'Reilly, the most popularly watched person on television and cable, and listen to Rush Limbaugh, the most popular voice on conservative radio, what you're hearing are people who deny that they are having any of their rights eviscerated. To the contrary, on the one hand, they wave a flag saying protect the Constitution. They have all these people on talking about patriotism and patriots and the founding fathers. They're constantly intoning the founding fathers as the models, and yet today every one of our founding fathers would be on a FBI watch list if not already assassinated or arrested, because they all engaged in what was considered at the time sedition. In fact, the King of England was to have them arrested and tried and hung or shot for sedition. And we have a Sedition Act in the United States. In fact, this president has recently invoked that in one particular case. So when you see these people, does it ever challenge you on an emotional gut level to say, how in the world can you stand there and be so hypocritical to say you care about our rights and Constitution and our historic founding fathers, and yet everything that's happening today goes directly against what they represented, and you're actually supporting it. You're promoting fascism in America. You're promoting taking away our constitutional rights and tearing it up, and yet your audience believes that you're a great defender of something that you're an absolute hypocrite to. Those are my feelings, not yours. I wanted to share that and get your response, please.
Well, first of all, I'm afraid I don't think I ever have listened to Rush Limbaugh or watched Bill O'Reilly, but yes, I know the kind of things they say. You know, I actually had 4 years in government. It was the Canadian government. But I saw for myself and was alienated by the way in which you get people are conditioned to think and talk in certain ways inside the machine. And that's true of bureaucrats, that they, if they want to get ahead, and most of them do, then they know that there are certain things that they have to say and certain things they must never mention. The Kennedy assassination, for example, your career is finished in Washington if you begin to show an interest in an event which, whatever you say about it, affected the political succession in this country. And that applies to journalists as well, that there's, in fact, you see a great deal of people going from the media into government, from government into the media. It is more and more going from the army into the military-industrial complex and going from there into finance, Wall Street. It's all one big system, and all of them must think in certain ways and must not think about other things in certain ways, to the extent that they're not even aware that they're doing it. They just become totally conditioned to this. Now, you could probably make the opposite argument and say that those of us who are outside protesting also have our conditioned responses and so on. Maybe that is, but we are always listening to what the government is saying, and the government is not listening to us. And not only that, but I think it's a very alarming new development, and I think it started under Obama, that the State Department actually set up an office whose job it was to combat conspiracy theories, to persuade people that what happened on 9/11, well, it was a conspiracy theory of 19 Arabs, but nothing outside of that. And for a while, they were actively promoting the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald did it and did it alone. But this proved so ridiculous, I think they dropped that part of it. But this is thought control. This is the bureaucracy not only conditioning itself to think in certain ways, but taking measures to make the rest of the country think the same way. The DEA also, a big part of their budget is devoted to combating the idea that we should legalize marijuana, even though this would do more than any other single step to take the profit out of the warring cartels in Mexico. So it's a question of all thought, all of us. Our thought is socially conditioned, and there is a great gap appearing between the independent thinkers, those of us on the outside, and those on the inside who condition themselves to think the right way and say the right things and avoid the right topics in order to get ahead in this colossal machine thing. I'm going to take issue a bit with Peter Phillips. I don't want to make too much out of it. But the trouble with bringing in fascism is that there was a kind of ritualized violence with fascism, both in Italy and in Germany, Kristallnacht and the Night of the Long Knives and that sort of thing. And that aspect of fascism we haven't seen. We haven't seen stormtroopers in the streets. So I think it's better just to label this what it is. It's a war machine. It's dedicated to domination of the rest of the world and suppression of all the people who agree with, agree with the Founding Fathers that America should take care primarily of its own government and not try to rule everyone else.
All right, I'm going to have a follow-up question, but before I do that, let me give you two examples of what is happening that the media will not touch. And once you write something like this, you are then on a list, a watch list. This is from Will Potter from the website Green. I'm not sure what it is. GreenTheNewRed.com, and it says this: Freedom of Information request reveals FBI domestic terrorism training material on activists. Quote. Newly released FBI presentations show the flawed, misleading information the government is using to train agents to identify and investigate domestic terrorists, groups such as animal rights activists and environmentalists. Among the more troubling portions of the training materials are warnings of activists using the Freedom of Information Act itself, engaging in non-violent civil disobedience and gathering in coffee shops. The domestic terrorism training materials were obtained through a Freedom of Information Act by ACLU. They offer additional insights into the disturbing pattern of the FBI actively misrepresenting political activists as terrorists and manufacturing domestic terrorist threats where none exist, akin to the notorious COINTEL program under J. Edgar Hoover. And then it goes on to talk about how the new recruits in the FBI are told that the Greens, people in the environmental movement, quote, individuals should get back to nature. So people believing in getting back to nature who, quote, meet on college campuses, coffee shops, internet cafes, their criminal activity includes civil disobedience where people lock arms together. This is called sleeping dragons. But now, this is the interesting point, they are, quote, paranoid, security conscious, and the FBI has infiltrated their groups and is orchestrating them, in the case of the Cleveland-made terrorists, to actually treat criminal activity. So now, if they resist home foreclosures, they're terrorists. If they create community gardens, they're terrorists. And many other activities not mentioned by the Bureau. So could you imagine that today, and this is where I would have to suggest that it may be premature, Dr. Scott, to think that because we have not seen jackboots in the street, that we will not see that. That we have the temperament, we have the methods, we have the camps, we have the laws, and now we have from their own information manual that if you are wanting a community garden, if you are locking arms in protest, if you are an environmentalist, if you're doing any of these things, now you're on their list and you're now being termed a terrorist in the teaching. So they're conditioning, as you rightly said, a mind control. They're now conditioning all the people in the system. Oh, that person wants a community garden, terrorist. And now they're infiltrating. Now that's one part. The second part is this. This is from something I just received before I went on the show. This is breaking news about an MFA investigation. It leads to 21 criminal animal cruelty charges. Quote, hidden camera video footage secretly recorded by an MFA investigator has led to 21 criminal cruelty to animals charges against the owner, two managers, and five employees of the Ontario Livestock Sales, one of the oldest and largest livestock auctions in Southern California. The shocking video shows downed animals, those too sick or injured to even move or stand, being left to suffer without food or water and die, and also being kicked, pulled, and beaten. And then it goes on to talk about all the other animals that had been suffering. And then an USDA welfare advisor said, quote, the handling was very rough and kicking animals is not acceptable. If this auction had been a federally inspected meatpacking plant, they would have suspended inspection, shut them down, end quote. Now, here's what's important about this. Historically, those of us who are in animal rights, and myself as a vegan and an animal rights activist, we could get a copy of something like that, get it into the media, and somebody would pay attention, but no one in the mainstream media would, not left or right. Now, that constitutes an act of terrorism. The new law signed by Obama is that if you go onto a farm or any operational business, and if you take a photograph of, record, or video any cruelty to any animals, you are the one arrested for terrorism and not the person who committed the crime against the animals. You, for exposing the crime, are now the target, and that is now the law. So right now, anyone filming any animal cruelty on anyone's property, you will be deemed by the FBI a terrorist. So that is a very serious situation. And finally, this comes from Fairwinds president, who is the organic farm in Portland, stopped producing food after radiation tests. Quote, very frightening what happened on the West Coast. And then this discussion in video, they show that there was radiation coming down in the rain, British Columbia, Seattle, that all of Washington, Oregon, and part of California, that that a major organic farm, one of the largest organic farms, then tested the soil, found out that it was radioactive. And yet the mainstream media would not touch this. And now the people who put this information out, including the people on the organic farm who stopped producing up in Portland, are now under suspect. Why? Because they're doing something that affects the United States, its image. We don't have any problem with radiation. Fukushima didn't cause a problem here. Oh, yes, it did. Yes, it did. And now consuming fish from the Pacific, consuming food from Oregon, even Oregonians are not aware of this, and yet they tested the soil and voluntarily stopped growing at the organic farm in Portland because of this. Now, when you tell that kind of truth, even you're not whistleblowing, you're simply telling the truth, now you're on a list. So these are the things that put us on a list today, and once you're on those lists, you have no control over what will happen to you. And I don't believe that we should take any comfort in the fact that we have not yet been arrested, that Chris Hedges has not yet been disappeared, that you have not yet ended up disappeared, that we should think that somehow this is just a corporate and military issue instead of a human rights issue that could metastasize into the greatest malignancy of our freedom Americans have ever seen. Your response, Dr. Scott, please.
Well, I'm more qualified to respond to your first point than your second, which I'm learning about from you and I was not aware of. On this question of being listed as a terrorist, you're talking to one right now. I am listed on the Internet as a defender of terrorism. It's because I spoke to a class in Washington shortly after 9/11, and somebody tape recorded what I said, and I said, whatever you call these people, don't call them cowards, which incidentally Rick Santorum has also said. So if I'm a terrorist or a defender of terrorists, so is he. And the other thing I said, which I think is wisdom going back to antiquity, that what goes around comes around. So I am listed as a defender of terrorism. I suspect that it was the FBI, first of all, taped my call, and secondly, leaked it to a right-wing organization who put it on the web, because that's what they did back in the Vietnam War. What am I guilty of, in fact? I'm totally nonviolent. I helped create a program at Berkeley in order to teach nonviolence. I criticize almost everybody in sight because most mass movements aren't nearly as committed to nonviolence as I am. And I write books. So if somebody like me can be put on a list as a defender of terrorism, I think we have to turn it around and all compete to make sure we're all on lists. And once we have, say, half the population of America on lists, then maybe we'll be in a position to finally put 1 or 2 million people in the streets and affect some significant change to this thing, because it's going to have to change. It's either going to get very much worse, or America is going to find the social resources to do something about this. And I think one of the things that we have to do is to get people to be willing to be on lists and to be willing to be seen out in public and doing things like photographing police violence and so on. The more people do it, the more we'll get to the point where we can do something about it.
I appreciate your insights there. They are profound, and your commitment to peace and the truth is remarkable. I would simply add that I believe that before you'll see 2 million people taking the streets in America, you'd have to have 2 million people arrested to awaken them. So I don't believe until the arrests come, until the collapse comes, the economic collapse, when they start to actually wake up from the fog that they have been, as Professor Peter Phillips said, the fog of this distraction, the bread and circuses, the reality shows, and realize that this is not a reality game, this life we're living, that we're not going to get their attention. But I thank you for that. My final comments and question for you, Professor Peter Phillips, is this. Could you address the same question I asked Dr. Scott? How is it that on the left we could have unions that say that we're for the workers, yet I have not seen those unions orchestrate a national call for national strikes against the militarization of our police, the evisceration of constitutional rights? I see them organize, and rightly so, and I support that for collective bargaining and the rights of unions. I'm pro-union, but I haven't seen the unions be, as a mass, be pro our constitutional rights here. And also on the right, when people talk constantly, incessantly, and wearing their flag, they're doing just the opposite to end up causing that flag to be nothing more than a shroud. I don't see where any of the people currently in the media, any of them, are doing anything to actively challenge the suppression of all the inequalities we've been talking about when it comes to the evisceration of our civil liberties, because the very people who are handling this are the Republican and conservative political and economic heads in Washington. Your thoughts, please.
We're seeing some matching up of unions, SEIU, and the Teamsters with Occupied in various capacities. We did close down the Port of Oakland with cooperation from the unions here last fall for a day. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done in that area. When Peter talked about fascism, I agree that it's a different form of fascism than the Nazis and the jackboots. But you would have to ask the 80,000 people who were stopped and searched and frisked in New York last year for nothing by the police on the street to just walk, just being there and present, 80% black and brown, are just being stopped every day. And, you know, that's an interference. That's a complete involvement. And the FBI now has 15,000 undercover agents working, you know, at $100,000 per assignment, infiltrating groups all over the country. Where they will infiltrate a community with suspect-minded individuals, encourage the suspects to carry out attacks. They'll provide weaponry, funds, and a plan, and then bust them before anything happens, supposedly. But most of the major terrorist plots in the U.S. that have been uncovered, the New York subway plot, the Chicago Sears Tower, and many others, have been encouraged by and promoted by FBI infiltrators in those groups. So we've got this combination of FBI pushing leftists to engage in illegal activities and a constant street presence of police officers looking at anybody as suspicious, let alone stopping and searching cars willy-nilly anywhere in the country under supposed DUI and, you know, things. Our Fourth Amendment rights are gone. So there's a whole array of things that are very fascist.